You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Live from Chickentown, this is the Flopcast, episode 497.
On flopcast.net.
Yes, yes. Hello, Cornflake.
Hello. Hi, Kevin.
It's flop fight night tonight, Cornflake. We're having a flop fight.
We are having a flop fight, and we've brought a friend.
Well, you know, it's been several months since we did a good old-fashioned flop fight tournament here on the Flopcast, but last time we did a flop fight, we had as our special guest one of the directors of the Dragon Con American Sci-Fi Classics track. That was Joe to do the Love Boat flop fight with us. This week, our special guest is also one of the directors of the Dragon Con American Sci-Fi Classics track, because everybody, please say hello to Gary Mitchell.
Joe wasn't available, so I subbed in.
Your assumption is that we call Joe first, and then I guess we'll have to call Gary.
Yeah, I'm used to it.
No, you were at the top of my list for this flop fight. But Gary, yeah, we were talking before the show started tonight. We go way back, you and I, like probably about a decade.
Right about before Joe and I even started doing the classics track, which our first year was 2012.
Yeah, and I think I started working with the classics track down at Dragon Con the following year in 2013. But I think I met you at least a year before that. I think you and I did a panel together in 2012. On the other track, the non-classics track.
The other tracks, the lesser tracks.
Well, we love Kelly's track as well, the non-classics, yes. Sci-fi fantasy media track. And I think you and I did a panel back in 2012, if I have my timeline correctly, called Geek TV.
Yes.
Remember that? Of the 8,000 panels that you've done?
Yeah, they all start to blur after a while. They have to either really, really stink or really, really be fantastic for them to stick out now.
Cornflake, if you think that I do a lot of convention panels, meet Gary. Gary's panel schedule is amazing.
Well, you know, it's part of it was when Joe and I first started, we didn't have a panelist base, so it was mostly us and whoever we could strong arm into being on a panel. No, sit down, talk. And also, once you've been on panels, at least for me, it's hard to go back into the audience because you're sitting there going, I have an opinion. I have an opinion and you need to know it.
But what you and Joe have done with that sci-fi classics track at Dragon Con for, man, almost a decade now has been just remarkable. That's the most fun room in all of Dragon Con. It's just the best. And that's been my honor and pleasure to work with you guys all these years, and now it's all coming to an end because it's all being ruined tonight by a ridiculous flop fight. But before we get to that, Cornflake, let's start as usual. What's happening for National Whatever Day?
National Whatever Day!
Had to get weird for this week. We are celebrating the birthday on November 20th of Roger Bumpus.
I don't know what that name means. Gary, do you know that name?
Multi-Bumpus?
Roger Bumpus is known best, I think, for his long-running role as Squidward Tentacles. So he's the voice of Squidward on SpongeBob SquarePants.
Ooh.
But for our purposes, he was also, he goes way back. He did a lot of voice work on cartoons in the 80s and into the early 90s. He was the voice of Lewis Tully on the Real Ghostbusters.
Okay, so going way back to the 80s then. So this guy's been around a while. I don't know this name.
I think it might be because most of his more recent work has been Nickelodeon stuff and even Cartoon Network stuff like We Bare Bears and Teen Titans Go. And
do you know what he does on Teen Titans?
Dr. Light.
Dr. Light. Oh, ah. That's a classic DC villain. Dr. Light.
Yes.
A goofy old Justice League villain.
Yeah. When you need an arch enemy, but not all the calories.
Right. Back in the earlier 80s, though, he was doing voices on Alvin and the Chipmunks. I think he was in one episode of The Jetsons and also in Mighty Mouse, The New Adventures.
Oh, the Ralph Bakshi version. Yikes.
Yeah.
So SpongeBob, I don't go too deep on SpongeBob. I've seen maybe 1.5 episodes, and even that was like 15 years ago.
Yeah, he's the sassy, sarcastic one. So I figured if you knew any of the SpongeBob characters besides SpongeBob himself, that would be one you would be familiar with.
Yeah, it's a good show. What I saw of it in the early 2000s, I thought, okay, this is cute. That's pretty funny. And then I just never saw it again. I know Tom Kenny is the voice of SpongeBob.
Mm-hmm.
And that's as far as I go on SpongeBob voice credits.
Clancy Brown is Mr. Krabs.
Oh, cool. I just heard Bobcat Goldthwait on a podcast yesterday, and he was talking about Tom Kenny because they go way back. He said he's known Tom Kenny since they were 6 years old.
Oh, wow.
And they were a comedy team together, the very beginning of their comedy career. They used to go by Tomcat and Bobcat.
Oh, that's funny. Ah,
that's good.
And then Tom Kenny lost the cat thing and Bobcat didn't. And now here we are.
My favorite story is I know that he's also friends with Dana Gould. He does the voice intro and outro for Dana Gould's podcast.
Yes.
This is Tom Kenny speaking. But I heard a story one time he was talking about that every now and then he'll stick his head into the kids' departments at stores to make sure that the SpongeBob stuff is still selling. It's like, okay, good. I'm still getting royalties.
Yeah, well, Tom was at Dragon Con just a few years ago with his band. He did a big concert at Dragon Con. It's Tom Kenny and the High Seas. And it's like a big band with horns and backup singers and stuff.
Oh.
And yeah, they were amazing. But at one point during that show, he broke a microphone, like he was throwing a microphone around or something.
Oh, no.
He broke something on stage, and then he looked over like at the tech booth, and he was like, it's okay, I'll pay for it. I've got sponge money.
Sponge money.
And speaking as a member of a band called the Sponge Awareness Foundation, just to clarify, I do not have sponge money.
No. Although I would figure somebody who's aware of sponges would be aware of SpongeBob.
Yeah, we're aware of SpongeBob and how he has all the money. Cornflake, are you impressed by how Gary and I deflected to make the whole conversation about somebody who we actually know?
Yep. So happy birthday to Roger Bumpus.
Absolutely. And that's a name that sounds like we should have known, Gary. So shame on us.
Yes.
We all learned a little something today. And now to make up for any educational value in this show, let's do something completely ridiculous. That'd be a flop fight.
I'm on board for that.
So Flop Fight, it's a tournament. And Gary, you know all about this kind of thing because you guys do tournaments every year down at Dragon Con, right? We do SciFighters.
Indeed. One of my absolute favorite. I was talking about there has to be a really, really good panel for me to remember it. One of my absolute favorites, which you recorded, is what started kind of this. We did the vehicle showdown, which then turned into monkeys versus minions, which is one of my all-time favorite things to have ever happened that I've been part of.
That was a very special moment in Dragon Con Classics track history. But yeah, it started as a vehicle tournament like the Batmobile versus the General Lee and so on. And then at some point it somehow devolved into monkeys versus minions. And we were just arguing over Dr. Zaius versus stormtroopers.
Yes.
A whole new tournament just broke out at the end of the real one. It was fantastic.
Yeah, and I love how it came down to Enos, who's the minion of Roscoe P. Coltrane on the Dukes of Hazzard?
Yep.
Versus Peter Tork.
Yes, representing from the monkeys division.
Yes.
Amongst, you know, Space Monkey Gleek and Dr. Zaius and everybody. Yeah, Peter Tork somehow sneaked into the monkeys division of the tournament, and he almost won the whole thing. I believe Enos squeaked out the victory in the end, shockingly.
Because he had a gun.
That's true. Ooh. Peter Tork was rarely packing heat.
Yes. It was a thing of beauty. One of the it's like only at Dragon Con.
It was a very wacky, ridiculous moment, and that's what we love. And yeah, there is audio of that. You can listen to Monkeys versus Minions if you dive back into the Flopcast archives. And so that's SciFighters, the tournament that's part of the Classics track. Now, around here on the Flopcast, when we do a flop fight, we make it even weirder, because we add a whole other weird twist to how these competitions go. We will get to that. The subject for tonight's Flop Fight. And the reason I wanted Gary here, because I know Gary is a guy who knows the 80s and who knows movies, and I thought you'd be perfect for this discussion, because this is the Brat Pack edition of the Flop Fight.
I love that we're subjecting the Brat Pack to a Flop Fight. And there's nothing they can do to stop us.
Nope.
Because, man, that was just, you know, the 80s. It was just young Hollywood run amok. The same bunch of wacky young actors were suddenly starring in every movie.
Yep.
And we are just going to go through part one of our Brat Pack Flop Fight this week. And we'll come up with our finalist who shall compete next week's show. But let's just do this. I have three cups here. The first two cups contain names of Brat Pack members. So I'm drawing the first name. I have drawn... Oh, yikes, we're starting out strong. I've drawn Molly Ringwald.
That is a strong start.
Oh, Molly.
So we'll say right out of the gate, Breakfast Club gets you automatic entry into this tournament, I assure you.
Yeah.
Everybody from the Breakfast Club will be playing.
Yes.
Either this week or next week.
Well, I mean, to be fair, you could call this the Breakfast Club face-off.
Breakfast Club was ground zero for Brat Pack. Breakfast Club and St. Elmo's Fire, and maybe one or two movies beyond that. But I think that's the real heart of the Brat Pack, was those two movies, which both came out in the same year in 1985. I mean, Molly was on the cover of Time magazine and Life magazine. Like, I don't know if the kids today can comprehend how massive Molly Ringwald was for a while there. We've discussed Molly Ringwald on the Flopcast a lot, especially this year. Molly's already participated in a Flop Fight.
That's true.
At the beginning of the year, we did a Facts of Life Flop Fight. And of course, Molly was a Facts of Life girl, season one. Mm-hmm. Before they cleaned house.
Like, no, Miss Molly, we cannot keep you. We have we already have an overload of precociousness.
Yeah, poor Molly had to go slink away from Facts of Life and become a huge movie star instead. Molly, we loved in Space Hunter Adventures in the Forbidden Zone, which mm-hmm. we've also spoken of on the Classics track. I think I defended Space Hunter in Sci-Fi Court, one of our quarantine panels last year. And then from there, she just rolled right into the heart of the Brat Pack era. Of course, you know, the big three, the classic John Hughes trilogy, mm-hmm. 16 Candles, Breakfast Club, Pretty in Pink, and a bunch more stuff beyond that. These days, of course, we love Molly on Riverdale, where she is Archie's mother, which was just perfect. They did a lot of stunt casting for Riverdale, like the parents. They'd get mm-hmm. a lot of people that were like former teen stars themselves. And of course, Archie's father was Luke Perry.
Yeah.
And then Archie's mother, brilliant casting. She's already got the red hair. Anyway, that's Molly. We love Molly. And she's got to be considered a favorite going into this Flop Fight. But who knows what's going to happen. Let's see who Molly is facing as I reach into the other cup.
I'm rooting for Ally Sheedy on this.
Wouldn't that be something? You want some Breakfast Club girl-on-girl face-off right out of the gate? That would be...
That's what I'm hoping for.
Astonishing. Well, I have drawn... Oh, you know what? I did... Close. I did not draw Allie, but this is a Facts of Life girl on Facts of Life girl for round one. We've drawn Jamie Gertz.
Oh, wow.
Hi.
All right, Jamie... Again, Jamie competed in the Facts of Life Flop Fight earlier this year. So we've got a couple of veterans of the Flop Fight facing off. Jamie, I mean, not considered a major Brat Packer, but she was around. She was in a lot of those movies, usually in smaller roles. Mm-hmm. But like, you forget how much of that stuff she was a part of. Like, she had a small role in 16 Candles and Quicksilver, the Kevin Bacon bike messenger movie.
Yeah, the big one for me is Lost Boys.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, of course. She's the half vampire girl in Lost Boys. Star. Remember, her name was Star.
Yes.
And I mean, you can go on. Less Than Zero is a big one as well, you know, because that has Andrew McCarthy and Robert Downey Jr. and a lot of those deep, no fooling around Brat Packers. Mischief, she was in also in the mid 80s. So she was certainly around. But yeah, Facts of Life. She was a character named Boots, who was like a snobby friend of Blair, and she was only in a handful of episodes. I knew her first from Square Pegs.
In the early 80s, yeah.
She was Muffy, the preppy girl, sort of the antagonist to the two main Square Pegs girls, Sarah Jessica Parker and what's her name?
I know her from her post-80s days as being in the 1996 movie Twister.
Yeah,
I forgot she was in Twister. I think of Helen Hunt, and then I couldn't tell you who else was in Twister. But yeah, Jamie was there too. Was she one of the maniacs chasing after the tornadoes?
Wasn't she the one who was supposed to marry Bill Paxton, but he was like too busy being a science guy and she was too busy like a stick in the mud, basically. She was she was the distraction love interest until he could get back together with Helen Hunt.
Yeah, she was good at that. They tend to put her in those kind of antagonist roles, being like girl number two in every movie.
The main lesson we all learned, though, from Twister is don't take federal funding for your science. Otherwise, you deserve to die when your truck's picked up by a tornado and thrown to the winds.
Well, what I loved in Twister, which I have not seen Twister in literally a quarter century, and I just saw it the one time, but the whole movie was, hey, there's a tornado starting over there. Go, go, go. And they drive as fast as they can towards the tornado. And then suddenly they say, oh, no, we're going to die. Turn around. Go, go. We've got to get away from this tornado. And back and forth they'd go. That's the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that special effects can make a cow and a twister look really cool.
So, yeah, so many just crazy fun credits from Jamie Gertz. And I also want to point out, here's another Atlanta connection. Gary's down there in the Atlanta, Georgia area where we have Dragon Con every year. Jamie Gertz owns the Atlanta Hawks.
Oh, well, somebody had to.
Jamie and her husband. This is, you know, NBA franchise from Atlanta, the Atlanta Hawks. Yeah, Jamie owns the team.
Well, there you go. She did good then.
She sure did. There's some bizarre Brat Pack trivia for you. So it's Molly versus Jamie. And now again, you know, Molly is certainly the heavy hitter when it comes to Brat Pack. However, now we have to see what's the competition. What are they doing? That's why we go to the third cup. And let's see. The competition is... I think we may have done this before, but we've drawn it again. The competition is pizza delivery.
Mm.
Molly and Jamie.
Molly versus Jamie on pizza delivery.
Delivering pizza pie. Now, Jamie was in Quicksilver, in which Kevin Bacon was a bicycle delivery person. So she has that slight delivery connection. That's a pretty thin credit to hang on, though, for this fierce competition. I mean, Molly was in Space Hunter. There was some serious... crazy science fiction travel going on. She's been through some rough travel situations, which would lend itself to, the nasty world of pizza pies.
Yeah.
And yet I would think that delivering anything would be beneath Molly Ringwald.
You're looking at her as the princess from Breakfast Club, Claire.
Yeah.
And she could not be bothered delivering a pizza pie. She just wants to sit there, you know, nibbling on her sushi.
Yeah. That's how I see it.
I loved how that was a joke in Breakfast Club. It's lunchtime. You know, the kids break out their lunches there in their Saturday detention. And that was like a wacky bit that Molly had sushi. Because in 1985, that was just incomprehensible.
It was weird raw food.
Yeah, it was like a punchline that, look at that, Molly has sushi.
Molly has sushi and Allie has that weird pixie sticks sandwich.
Yeah, she had the sugar that you drink out of a straw. So yeah, that's a good point though, Cornflake, is does Molly want to have anything to do with pizza delivery? Also, as the owner of the Atlanta Hawks, Jamie Gertz is going to want to charge like $18 for a slice of pizza.
True.
That's true.
I've seen those, arena prices.
Yeah, if anyone wants pizza from Jamie Gertz, she's not going to deliver it. You have to come up to the window and get
it. That's right.
And I guess we have to consider as well Breakfast Club. Although, you know, who has pizza for breakfast except me?
I've had cold pizza for breakfast.
I do enjoy a good breakfast pizza pie.
Yeah, anyone who's been college or college adjacent, I think, has had cold pizza for breakfast.
This is kind of a tough call. So I've got to put it out to my panel here, to Cornflake and to Gary. What do you think? Molly versus Jamie. Giving this to Jamie would be a huge upset, but upsets do happen in a flap fight. What do you think?
I think there's a lot of things that I could see Molly Ringwald doing, but pizza delivery is just not one of them.
Yeah, and I've kind of got to go for Jamie as well, just for the simple fact that I'm thinking of pizza delivery. I think the delivery is the more important aspect of that, because you can make the pizza, but if you don't deliver it to me, that's a failure. So while Molly may make the pizza, Jamie will get it to me.
Well, I got to say, this is a shocking upset.
I didn't want it to be like this.
On paper, just looking at a list of Rat Packers, I probably would have called Molly to win the whole thing. But knocked out in round one by the underdog, Jamie Gertz. There you go. Molly's out. And let's move on.
Yeah, she will go sulk with Ducky.
Up next, I have drawn... Man, I'm still drawing the women here because I just pulled out Ally Sheedy.
Mm.
Oh, there's Ally now.
I assure you, there's some guys in here somewhere. But, all right, there's Ally. There's Molly's co-star from Breakfast Club, Ally Sheedy, who played Allison, the basket case, if you will, in Breakfast Club. And man, I know we've spoken about Ally many, many times on the Flapcast. For me, the big ones are Breakfast Club and War Games.
Yeah.
And showing her versatility in that, I mean, Breakfast Club, she was just, you know, a wacko. She was just this quirky...
She was a proto-goth.
Absolutely. Yeah, just the outcast in school, the weird girl doing her own thing. And then War Games, which was a couple years earlier, then she's just like the cool, fun girl who's trying to get Matt Broderick to, you know, lighten up a little bit. While he's busy almost blowing up the world.
Right.
Of course, I loved her for a Short Circuit.
Well, yeah, then she went on to, let's just ditch Matt Broderick and everybody else and just go hang out with a robot.
Because wouldn't you if you could?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say. I mean, you know, her hanging out with the Goot.
Yes. Got some Steve Guttenberg action in Short Circuit, of course. Now, and she's another really double threat Brat Packer in that she was in Breakfast Club and St. Elmo's Fire. So you do not get any Brat Packier than that. Let's see who Ally is facing in this opening round. It's going to be Ally versus, oh man, I've drawn another woman. I got to shuffle this paper a little more. We've drawn Phoebe Cates.
Ooh.
Phoebe Cates.
Yikes. And again, we've spoken about Phoebe on the Flapcast. I think we celebrated Phoebe's birthday a while back for a National Whatever Day.
Yeah, National Whatever Day.
We love Phoebe Cates. And Phoebe was sort of not really in the middle of the Brat Pack scene.
Mm-hmm.
But again, she was around and she got started. I mean, she was super young when she got started in, you know, 1982 or so is when her first movie started coming out. You know, Paradise, the notorious Paradise with Willie Ames, her first movie.
Yes.
And then Fast Times was that same year.
Yeah, Fast Times is the one that really put her on the map.
Oh, come on. You know, you hear that Cars song. it's all over. You're thinking of Phoebe Cates. But yeah, she was making those kind of goofy sex comedies and stuff, Private School and whatnot through the early 80s. Gremlins, of course.
Yes.
Probably the Brat Packiest thing she did was Bright Lights, Big City.
With good old Michael J. Fox.
Michael J. Fox, Kiefer Sutherland was in there. But right now, kids, it's Ally versus Phoebe. Let's see what the competition is. What I have drawn is the classic 80s game show Press Your Luck.
Ooh.
Which one would be better?
No whammies.
Facing off against the whammies?
Yes, they are both competing on Press Your Luck. Now, Press Your Luck, it's a lot of chance and it's some strategy. You know, as you're going around the board and hitting the whammies and whatnot, you've got to decide when you're going to keep playing, when you're going to pass your turns over to another player and hope that they just go bankrupt. You know, there's a lot going on. There's trivia questions.
I don't know anybody who was a kid when that show was at the peak of its power that was not addicted to it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's like I skipped school to watch it anytime I was sick.
It was absolutely mesmerizing. And I mean, the twists and turns, it's one of the seriously most exciting game shows in history. Like there could be these dramatic comebacks right at the end. And then there's famously, there's that guy that figured out the pattern of the whammies and was able to just go on and just break the bank. He could just play forever. And guy made over $100,000.
Yeah, it's wild.
I don't know if Ally or Phoebe are at that level of press your luck mastery, but perhaps. What do you think? Ally Sheedy, Phoebe Cates. With Ally, you've got to look at Short Circuit. You know, she's worked with a robot extensively, which gives her that sort of technological advantage in playing a very technology-based game.
Yeah, but then Phoebe could just stick the gremlins onto the whammies.
Ooh. Wow, gremlins versus whammies, I would really like to see.
Upcoming soon on Flop Fight. I'm going to have to go with the Johnny Five factor.
Yeah, Johnny Five is alive. Cornflake, you like Ally in this one? What do you think?
So here's the thing. You kind of have to dig a little bit deep for this. Mm-hmm. Phoebe Cates is the daughter of Lillian Joseph Cates. Joseph Cates was, of course, a Broadway producer, which is why it makes sense that Phoebe would go back into theater later in her career. Mm-hmm. But Joseph Cates also created the $64,000 question.
Ooh.
On TV.
So she's got some game show.
Cornflake, did you just reach back and grab your hardbound volume of the complete biography of Phoebe Cates?
Well, I mean, you guys are pressing me for an answer, and I was thinking really, really hard. It's like, how would one of these two...
We were pressing you for an answer?
Yes. Like, how do you distinguish between these two? Because in some respects, I feel like it could end in a dead heat, but... Phoebe Cates descends from TV game show royalty, essentially. So I would push the needle in the direction of Phoebe.
Okay, I think I'm going to have to be the tiebreaker then in this case. And that's some astonishingly obscure Phoebe Cates trivia that's eerily relevant to this specific competition. So that was amazing, Cornflake. However... I got to go with Ally Sheedy and her stupid robot.
Well, you won't catch me minding one bit because you all know how much I really love Ally Sheedy. So
I think Ally is going to advance in this case. Let's move on and see if we can finally hit a dude in this Brat Pack competition or not, whatever. Up next, we have... Yes, here we go. Still sticking with the Breakfast Club. We have next Emilio Estevez.
Oh, Emilio.
Emilio!
Who would have expected him to turn out to be the more stable of the Estevezes?
He was really the goofy one back in the 80s, yeah.
Yeah, I always thought he would be the one that would go crazy and fly off the handle and be the, wow, okay.
Oh, yeah. So Emilio... Going back to like 1983, again, one of the major movies as far as rounding up the Brat Pack to get the 80s going for me is The Outsiders.
Yes.
Which has that astonishing ensemble cast. And there was Emilio, not one of the major roles, but he was there. He was part of the gang. Two-Bit was his character. He was the guy that just wanted to watch Mickey Mouse cartoons as opposed to going out and having a knife fight like the rest of them. That was Emilio. Did Repo Man right around that same time.
I'll always love him for Maximum Overdrive.
Yeah, you know, that crazy Stephen King movie. that was Stephen King directing.
Yes. And apparently he was on so much cocaine, he doesn't even remember any of it.
Yeah, I believe Stephen King and cocaine share co-directing credits on that movie, Maximum Overdrive, with the AC/DC soundtrack.
Accurate.
Yes.
Based on a Stephen King short story in which trucks take over the world. Mm-hmm. And only Emilio can stop them.
Yes. But he's also, you know, but he is another a double threat because he is in both Breakfast Club and St. Elmo's Fire.
Yes, just like Ally, he was there for both of the Ground Zero Brat Pack movies. So a super important member of the Brat Pack. Certainly beyond that, you know, Young Guns is a big one, Billy the Kid, and much more. Then he went on to just make those goofy Disney hockey duck movies.
Mighty Ducks, Gordon Bombay, my man.
Oh, sure. So, tons of super fun credits on Emilio. Who's he going up against? Let's go to cup number two, and I have drawn Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Oh my.
Here we go.
Well.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting.
Jennifer's another name that you, not a major Brat Pack member, but sort mm-hmm. of Brat Pack adjacent. And again, she was there. She was right in the thick of things through that Brat Pack era. I was looking up her credits earlier today, and... Her very first credit was a TV movie. I remember watching this thing in 1981. She starred in a TV movie called The Best Little Girl in the World.
Oh.
And it was about a teenage girl with anorexia.
Huh.
Interesting.
And I remember seeing this thing. I did not know it was her until today. I saw another movie that she made back then. She made a movie in 1981, which I just happened to catch on TV a couple of years ago, called Eyes of a Stranger, which starred the Love Boat's Lauren Tews. Julie, the cruise director, was the star of this kind of like slasher thriller horror movie. And Jennifer played her little sister.
Okay.
So she was very young. She was a blind girl. And I remember watching this thing and thinking, okay, here's young Jennifer Jason Leigh, and she's blind in this little supporting role. So I thought, at least she's not going to be naked for once, because this is Jennifer's naked in every movie she's ever made.
Yes.
So I'm thinking, all right, not in this one, though. But then it turns out, oh, yeah, she's naked in this one as well. Even in Eyes of a Stranger. Even in Eyes of a Stranger. Yeah. So Fast Times, of course, is the first major credit, along with Phoebe. There's Jennifer Jason Leigh in Fast Times, 1982.
And she's gone on to do a collection of very weird movies. Like, she did Existence.
Yes, Existence, and with a Z on the end.
Yeah, because, you know, that's important. You gotta make sure.
That's like David Cronenberg's. So that's getting seriously into the weird stuff.
Yeah, but she did The Jacket and that Spike Jones movie. I think it's Spike Jones, Schenectady, New York. Which is a weird movie.
Yeah, yeah. She's one of those actors that has really just not gone the straight, okay, here's Pretty Girl, I'll go make those regular movies like everybody else. No, she's made interesting movies her whole career. I guess Single White Female was another one of the big ones.
Yeah, interesting TV, too. She was the sister of the main character on Weeds.
Ah.
Yeah, she was really good in Weeds.
Cornflake can always deliver the Weeds facts, we've found over the years here. Yes. Jennifer Jason Leigh versus Emilio Estevez. Let's see what they're doing. The competition this time is a TV weather reporter.
You see, now this is where we needed the lady from Twister.
Well, we practically have the lady from Twister because we have Cornflake here. And this Cornflake is a professional meteorologist. You have worked professionally in weather. You've done TV and radio stuff. You know all this stuff. So, Gary, should we just hand this one right over to Cornflake? Cornflake, you make the call.
She definitely has the inside info.
I feel like you and I are the bumbling amateurs in this case. Cornflake, it's Emilio Estevez. It's Jennifer Jason Leigh, TV weather forecaster. Who are we giving this to? This is all on you.
Oh, I feel like this is really easy because I'm trying to picture Emilio Estevez do that. And he's more of an action guy. Not that he couldn't do a good job and maybe even be a stand-in, I think. But I think I gotta give it to Jennifer Jason Leigh on this one.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine Emilio standing still long enough to deliver a weather forecast.
Yeah, he's definitely, and now sports with Emilio.
That's right. He just wants to give you the Mighty Ducks score.
It's not that he's not good enough to deliver the weather forecast. There are just better roles suited for Emilio Estevez.
It'll be a little weird for the woman delivering the weather to be naked, but that's in her contract. It's every time.
No one will complain. That would be a rainy day you'd look forward to.
Oh, there will be zero complaints, of course. All right. Another upset, because again, we're knocking out a key Brat Pack member here in the opening round.
Yeah, it takes my breath away that we're taking Emilio Estevez out like this, but there's no contest.
No, that's a perfectly justified decision. And so it's another upset in this flap fight, but Jennifer shall advance. Let's go to our final opening round for this week. The first name that I am drawing is Rob Lowe.
Oh,
okay.
This is another guy who was dead center, ground zero of the Brat Pack universe. Now, Rob was not in The Breakfast Club, but
St. Elmo's Fire.
He was in everything else.
Yeah. The previously mentioned Outsiders, St. Elmo's Fire.
That's right, Outsiders. He was Soda Pop Curtis, the middle brother of the Curtis brothers. St. Elmo's Fire, of course. How about Class?
Oh, yeah.
His class is, that's Andrew McCarthy, who's another, you know, major Brat Pack dude, and John Cusack and everybody else. Youngblood, his hockey movie with Patrick Swayze.
And he's definitely was the template for the Brat Packer who has the fall from grace and then redeem themselves story.
Oh, yeah. Because, again, this was young Hollywood gone crazy. You know, this was largely a party scene. And Rob was very much in the middle of that party scene back then, by all accounts. He was living the life and had his scandals and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a guy that I did not pay a lot of attention to back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't come to appreciate Rob Lowe until The West Wing.
Yes.
Which was 1999, many years later. And that was really his big comeback, because what a revelation he was on that. It was, oh, man, Rob Lowe is fantastic. And suddenly I was a huge fan. So it was The West Wing, and then, and he's done lots of TV since then, but his other big TV credit for me is Parks and Recreation.
Yep.
Right.
Man, when he came in like season two and was just hysterical on that. These days, he's a podcaster.
Yeah.
He does two podcasts every week. I listen to both of them. He has his own kind of regular interview show where it's just Rob and a guest every week. Mm-hmm. It's called Inspired by Parks and Recreation. It's called Literally with Rob Lowe, because that was the catchphrase of his character on Parks and Recreation. So Literally with Rob Lowe is a really nice show. And yeah, really smart, quick guy who can really carry an interview and a conversation. And then he does a second show as well. He just started another podcast just a few weeks back. It's a show about Parks and Recreation.
Oh.
Yeah, there's a podcast called Parks and Recollection.
Oh, that's clever.
It's hosted by Rob and another guy whose name I forget, but one of the writers from Parks and Recreation. And they're going episode by episode every week through the whole series. And they're maybe about 8-9 weeks into it right now.
That's going to take a while.
It's going to take a long time. But, you know, what a fine excuse to rewatch that wonderful show, because that's what we're doing. The mayor of Chickentown and I have started watching
along with the episodes.
We're watching along with Rob Lowe's podcast. Yeah, we watch the show every week and then listen to the podcast the next day. So check that out as well, Parks and Recollection. So meanwhile, anyway, that's Rob Lowe. And I guess we have to see who Rob Lowe is facing off against. Our final competitor this week is Rob's co-star from The Outsiders. It's Pony Boy. They were brothers in The Outsiders. C. Thomas Howell.
Oh.
We're pitting brother against brother.
I can't believe it.
The flop fights are brutal, ladies and gentlemen.
Civil War style. Let's do this. C. Thomas Howell.
Red Dawn.
Man, yeah, Red Dawn. There's another one of those amazing ensemble casts. With Swayze and Leah Thompson, Jennifer Grey. Red Dawn, a Cold War classic starring C. Thomas Howell. I forgot until I looked him up today that he was in E.T.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He was part of the gang of kids in E.T., like one of the friends of the older brother, right?
Yeah.
Is E.T. considered a Brat Pack movie?
No.
No, okay. It's a Spielberg. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, that was 1982, and it was kids. And he just happens to have had a very small part. There's really nobody else in that movie who would go on to be a part of the Brat Pack. Just a weird first credit.
Yeah. Drew Barrymore, I think, is the closest to a Brat Packer, and she was still too young for that.
Yeah. Yeah. She was too young. Man, she was trying. She was kind of like a hard partying 10-year-old.
Yes.
That's why I asked.
Yeah. Drew was never considered part of the Brat Pack because she was kind of the next generation.
Yeah. But for me, the big thing to remember about C. Thomas Howell is the infamous Soul Man, which a movie that could have only been made in the 80s.
Soul Man, such a problematic movie. Even at the time, I think people were very uncomfortable with Soul Man, in which it's a white kid who tans himself to such an extreme that he can win a scholarship intended for African-American students.
Yeah.
That's the wacky premise of Soul Man.
It's one of those movies that you wonder is like, how at every stage of production, there should have been someone going, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny is when I started working on this Brat Pack list and I was discussing it with the mayor of Chickentown a while back, and I said, you know, the problem with the Brat Pack is this is an awfully white list. Mm. This was really not a diverse group of actors that made up the Brat Pack. And Felicity said, well, there was C. Thomas Howell in Soul Man. It's as close as we come to diversifying this list.
That is distressing.
Yeah. But yeah, and he's around. He's been at conventions. I saw him down at DragonCon a few years ago. He was a guest of your Classics track.
Indeed.
That was one of my favorite moments in DragonCon history was your co-director, Joe, was on stage with C. Thomas Howell and Ralph Macchio together, and they recited the Stay Gold poem from The Outsiders.
Oh.
Yeah, it was magical. The other thing I remember about that panel is that it was Monday morning, so everybody was kind of wiped out, except for C. Thomas Howell, because I was sitting in the front row. Joe introduced C. Thomas Howell, and he came bursting into the room and ran across high-fiving everybody in the front row.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he was the only one left at DragonCon with any energy whatsoever. Very impressive. But he's popped up since then. He was in one of those Spider-Man movies a while back, and 24 he was on with his old buddy Kiefer. He did Bosch just a couple of years ago.
And didn't he do Walking Dead recently?
So a million things over the years, of course. C. Thomas Howell, one of those classic young 80s actors. And again, it's Rob Lowe versus C. Thomas Howell. I love that the Curtis brothers are facing off right now. Let's see what they're doing. The competition is... All right, this is this maybe the stupidest competition that I had in the cup. But the competition is that thing where you balance coins on your elbow and then try to flip your hand over and catch them.
Oh.
So, silly hand trick.
Yeah. You know that thing. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we went through a phase as a nation where everybody was trying to do that for a while.
Yes.
A few decades back. Rob Lowe versus C. Thomas Howell.
You know, I think Rob Lowe would think he's kind of above such a buffoonery. Whereas C. Thomas Howell would really get into it and start studying the dynamics.
Now, Rob Lowe did demonstrate some precision and dexterity when it came to rowing in the classic film Oxford Blues.
True.
I don't know that that same skill translates to catching coins off your elbow, but maybe.
This is a tough one.
This is a really tough one because it's so stupid. I have a couple of thoughts that I feel are tilting this in Rob Lowe's favor.
Ooh, do tell.
One is, I think the last time I saw C. Thomas Howell in person was at another convention here in Massachusetts a couple of years ago, and he had a long, crazy gray beard going. And I feel like that could be a liability in catching coins. I feel like the coins could just become...
You think the beard would get in the way?
Yeah, they would just become entangled. In his crazy, I mean, he looked like a drifter. Maybe he was, it might have been for some part that he was playing or something, but he had a big, crazy gray beard going.
So Rob Lowe is over there trying desperately to catch his coin and gets one, but C. Thomas, they're all stuck in my beard.
Absolutely. Whereas Rob Lowe, I feel, shaves like 8 times a day.
Yes.
Got to keep that pretty face going, you know?
Good point.
Mm-hmm. You got to keep the moneymaker fresh.
Also, like whatever weird products they were putting on C. Thomas Howell for Soul Man, that might make his skin extra slippery. So how's he going to balance a coin on that problematically dark elbow of his?
True.
So I feel like based on those two ridiculous thoughts, might want to give this one to Rob.
Yeah, you've swayed me.
All right.
Same.
There we go. That's the opening round. Let's move along to the next round then. So now we're going into reruns, and we should move a little faster now. But we have Jamie Gertz versus Ally Sheedy.
This will be interesting.
Sure. So Jamie, of course, coming off her shocking victory over Molly Ringwald, whereas Ally just took out Phoebe Cates. Now it's Jamie versus Ally, and the competition is Department Store Santa Claus.
Ooh. I know who I want to win for this one.
Ooh, who do you want to win?
I want it to be Ally Sheedy.
Explain. Why is your dream for Ally to be a department store Santa?
Because I just think that she's a little bit on the wacky side. And we discussed this because of the way she was in The Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Also, having starred in Short Circuit, I can see her having an appreciation for what kids would find entertaining.
She does seem a little more kid-friendly than Jamie Gertz. I could see Jamie being a little scary. I mean, Jamie is half vampire, remember?
Right. Yeah, and I can just see her playing with the beard and looking at the kids and like winking at them and just playing along with them much better than Gertz.
Now, Jamie Gertz is crazy rich. Remember, she owns a basketball team.
True.
So she might be able to come up with some, you know, super nice gifts for the kids. Although Department Store Santa, they really never give anything to the kids.
They don't give gifts.
They just sit there and lie.
They stoke the fires of your dreams, and then Christmas morning comes.
So with that in mind, I feel like I agree that Ally seems a bit more kid-friendly and fun as Santa. I'm okay with giving this one to Ally.
Yeah, now if we were doing the elves, I might go the other way.
Jamie seems a little more elfish, sure.
Good point.
Yeah. So that's her consolation prize. She gets to be the elf.
Jamie gets to be the elf assistant, put on the silly green suit with the pointy shoes and whatnot. But Ally, yes. Ally Sheedy is our Santa Claus. There, we've done it.
All right. Flopcast fans who have the ability to draw, we need that for this year's Flopcast Christmas card.
Ally Sheedy as Santa.
Moving on then, continuing in this round, in this second round, it's Jennifer Jason Leigh versus Rob Lowe.
Ooh.
Huh.
Let's see what these crazy kids are doing. The competition this time will be... Competition is Klingon. Somebody's going to be a Klingon.
And the competition is going to be fierce.
You know, I can see Jennifer Jason Leigh dressing up with the, like the Duras sisters with the boob window.
Yep, yep. But you can't see Rob in a boob window?
No, not a boob window. If we were going Romulans, I could definitely see Rob Lowe as a Romulan.
Sure, sure.
He's got the forehead for it.
Yeah, for one thing, to cover up that beautiful face of Rob Lowe and all that Klingon makeup, is he going to go along with that?
No, again, we were talking about, you got to keep the moneymaker clean and fresh.
Right.
Whereas Jennifer Jason Leigh, I mean, we saw the Hateful Eight. She'll put in the bad teeth and the wig, and she'll be like, bring it on. Kapla.
Jennifer has a beautiful face as well, but she's willing to take on those whatever weird role comes along.
Right. Plus, she's been in some science fiction horror films before. So this is not completely out of her realm.
She's done it all. I don't think she's ever done any Star Trek. But why not?
Yes. Paramount, get on that.
All right. This sounds like we're leaning towards a crazy upset right now, but I think we're leaning towards Jennifer taking out one of the core members of the Brat Pack. I think we're going Jennifer over Rob Lowe because she'd make a better Klingon.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And again, I got to point out, that means we're also getting a naked Klingon.
Yes.
Isn't that what the world has wanted?
Having been on the convention scene a while, yes.
What
yes,
the world is. Needs is a naked Klingon. That was the weirdest Dionne Warwick song ever, by the way. All right, we're arriving at our final match for this week, my friends. Ally Sheedy versus Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Wowie.
These two ladies have battled their way to the final fight of the night. And what are they doing? The winner this time shall go on to compete for the championship next week.
These two have such versatility.
Mm-hmm. It's Ally versus Jennifer, and the competition is, well, we're in November now, so this is appropriate. The competition is being one of those people holding a rope and walking along underneath a balloon in the Macy's Thanksgiving parade.
Nice. Balloon holder.
That's an important job.
Very important job, because you don't want Underdog breaking loose and terrorizing the nation.
There's going to be a baby Yoda balloon this year. You got to wonder if they'd wind up holding a string for baby Yoda.
Let's say specifically it's Ally and Jennifer, and they will be carrying baby Yoda in the parade.
Oof, stakes are high.
So who's going to have the better upper body strength?
Yeah, I'll bet it's a workout. It seems like an easy job, but that's a long, cold morning on the streets of Manhattan.
Especially if you're naked.
And dressed like a Klingon.
Right.
Whereas Ally Sheedy is dressed up like Santa Claus at this point, is nicely bundled up.
Yeah, she's nice and warm and toasty.
She could be in the parade twice.
Jennifer delivered the weather report. She played a Klingon, and now she's carrying the baby Yoda balloon all naked, all in one crazy Thanksgiving morning. That's a tough assignment.
This is a movie waiting to happen.
Yeah, that's how I've always wanted to spend Thanksgiving morning.
Yes.
Ally so far has played a round of Press Your Luck. Then she was department store Santa. Now it's on to Baby Yoda in the parade.
Yeah, see, I'm really conflicted because, you know, on the one hand, doing it naked is going to be a terrible disadvantage. But then Ally dressed as Santa Claus, they're going to throw her to the back of the line to be at the end for the... you can't be carrying a balloon. You're on the sleigh.
Right. Now, with Jennifer Jason Leigh, to get to the Macy's Day Parade, do you have to take the last exit to Brooklyn?
Ooh, nice call.
Ally could lose the Santa suit, you know, just kind of throw it to Al Roker at the starting line, and then off she goes. So I wouldn't say that the Santa suit is a deal breaker. I do like the idea of Ally carrying the balloon and then doubling back and hopping in the Santa float at the end of the parade as well, though. She could probably pull it off.
She could swing that.
Yeah, that's the fourth act climax of the movie, of her having to cut through the crowd. Will she make it in time? Will she get back there? Oh, no, will the parade be ruined?
Yeah, this could turn into like one of those crazy Hallmark Christmas movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like she finds true love along the way.
And then Jennifer Jesse Lee lets her go. It's like they were rivals the whole time in the balloon carrying. And then she's like, she realized the power of Christmas and the power of love reaches into that cold, naked Klingon heart.
Yes. So what do you think?
Yeah, just based on that alone, I've got to give it to Allie now.
I think Allie is going to pull this one out. That's a tough one, but yeah, Allie Sheedy, appropriately, because again, Allie, major force in the world of the Brat Pack. Our winner for this week, kids, is Allie Sheedy. I love it.
Yay!
This makes me so happy.
And we're just getting started. We'll continue this next week, but for this week, well, first of all, hey, Gary, man, this is long overdue. Thanks so much for hanging out with us tonight and just giggling over the Brat Pack.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I love the show, and I'm glad to finally be to have made the cut. I didn't think you were serious about all the chicken feed I had to bring, but I'm glad I listened to you, because I don't think...
You know the rules.
Yeah, I don't think I'd have made it into the room if I hadn't had that. Those are some vicious chickens.
There's a lot of very hungry chickens lurking around the studio. I know we can plug the American Sci-Fi Classics track, because you don't just hide all year and then resurface Labor Day weekend for Dragon Con. We're doing stuff with the Classics track all year long, right?
That is correct. Every other Thursday on Facebook Live and the YouTube, feel free to tune in and watch and comment along live, or go back and look at the nearly 2 years now of previous episodes, some of which you and Cornflake are both on, which we've got to get you both on some more.
We would love to do more of that. Oh, those are so crazy fun. Yeah.
Those are excellent.
Classics track online panels. We'll have links to that with this show, of course. And Gary, you're going to be back with us next week?
Yes.
I'm always afraid to ask, because we put these poor guests through the most ridiculous night of their lives.
Yeah, the most common answer to that question, Gary, is I'll have my agent call your agent.
Usually we just hear screeching tires as they just make a run for it.
Well, to quote another chicken-related adjacent property, I knew the podcasting job was dangerous when I took it.
Well, no, we look forward to continuing this next week. But right now, Cornflake, please get us out of here.
Will do, Kevin. We are at flopcast.net. We're on facebook.com/flopcast. Our handle on Twitter is @flopcast. And we're on Instagram, the_flopcast. You can head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a rating or a review. We would love that so much. And it would help other listeners of fine podcasts find the Flopcast and spread the joy. Music for the Flopcast is written and performed by the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
Sponge Awareness Foundation now featuring Naked Klingons. Be sure to catch our very next concert. You'll be horrified. Cornflake, thanks for another Flop Fight edition of the Flopcast. Gary, once again, thank you so much for joining us. Everybody, thanks for getting through a very silly show with us once again. Remember, of course, meanwhile, be safe, be kind, be silly. And we'll see you next week.
Peace and Rat Packs.
Do you know how fast you were going?
Sorry, officer. One episode every 2 weeks?
2 weeks!
Did you also know you're carrying a dangerously heavy load?
Yes, sir, we do. We've got interviews, fight nights, film discussions, Desert Island DVDs, and lots more.
I think we've got to take you down to the station. You do not have to write anything, but it may harm the Cosmic Pizza Podcast if you do not mention, when questioned, something you later wanted in the promo or feedbacks. Anything you do say may be used in said feedback.
Cosmic Pizza Podcast is not about the cosmos, all about pizza.
So, Brittany, Martha, tell me about your podcast.
Oh, no. It's like we're in sync, but also kind of a disaster.
We are always a disaster.
So, our podcast is fun if you want to hear two people talk about and complain about stuff that they love and also hate.
And drink.
And drink.
And the show is called?
Oh. but first, let's talk nerdy.
And you can find us on the ESO Network.
Ba-ding.
See you next Tuesday.
This is the Secret After Show. Gary, welcome to the Secret After Show.
Thank you. I tipped the bouncer.
You're sworn to secrecy. Don't tell anybody that this part of the show exists.
You have my word.
We have your word, and you may speak freely here because nobody's listening. Nobody.
Yes.
So honestly, how do you think the tournament's going so far?
It's very surprising. There were some upsets. I was shocked.
Yeah, there's always a lot of crazy upsets in this thing. We've done 5 or 6 of these now, I think. How many of these have we done, Cornflake?
Handful. Yeah, 5 or 6 sounds about right.
So this year we did, as we said, we did Facts of Life and we did Love Boat as flop fights. But before that, last year we did 2 or 3. We did We Are the World. We did all the participants in We Are the World. We did Lilith Fair.
Oh.
I loved that.
And we did Rankin Bass Christmas cartoon characters.
Oh, yeah. And we're coming into that time of year again.
Heading into the holiday. We'll have to do some weird Rankin Bass stuff again this year. So, yeah, endless possibilities. As you look back on all the tournaments that you've done, all the Sci-Fighter tournaments, we've mentioned a couple of them already, but what are the other tournaments that that you guys have done?
We did 80s action stars versus 80s wrestlers.
Yes.
And that one was fun. We did G.I. Joe versus Masters of the Universe.
Oh, man.
We did Creepy and Kooky versus Mysterious and Spooky. The Creepy and Kooky were like the TV monster things, you know, like the monsters and the Addams Family and all that. And then the Spooky was things like the people from the X-Files and Kolchak the Night Stalker. And so yeah, that one was... A good theme.
Then there was the cage match.
I was about to say the absolute highlight and still probably the greatest one we've ever done was the Nicolas Cage cage match.
Yes. It was just all Nicolas Cage characters competing against each other.
Yes.
Except for Sarah McLachlan, right?
Right. Sarah McLachlan, who had the run in and came out as the best Nicolas Cage.
Somehow Sarah McLachlan entered the cage match and won.
It was a thing of beauty. And if you don't mind, I'll say if anyone actually is curious and wants to listen, the Needless Things podcast actually recorded that one. So you can hunt through their archives and actually listen to the madness.
It was amazing. Shockingly, here on the Flopcast, we did, as we mentioned, a Lilith Fair flop fight. And Sarah competed in that, of course.
Oh, of course.
And lost.
No.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.